Good morning, everybody. It's Jeff Goldberg for the Sales Pro Network. It is Friday, April 5th. Oh, my goodness. We are in Q2. I can't believe it. The year is flying by. If you've joined us before, you know that I'm a sales coach and trainer. I work with both individuals and organizations internationally to help them do one thing and one thing only, get measurable and sustainable sales increases. And I founded the Sales Pro Network to help people do exactly that and to elevate the profession of sales. If you have joined us before, you know that every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, I either do a training for you or bring you a live guest who can add value to the profession of sales. And today is no exception. Today's guest, his company, Market Leader Solutions, helps companies find the right people in the right roles for critical roles in both sales and management. He helps them build stronger teams, set them up for levels of significant growth, and he's also the best-selling author of Winner's Mindset, Peak Performance Strategies for Success. Please welcome our guest, Joseph Skirsky. Good morning, Joseph.
Thank you, Jeff.
Great to see you, man. Could we start out by maybe you giving us the 2 to 3 minute version of your background, what brought you up to now?
Sure. Yeah, so for the past 20 years now, I've been in management consulting. But prior to that, I was actually running sales teams. The first sales team that I had, really interesting, had 30 sales reps. We were in fifth place out of 6 regions. And within 7 months, I made a couple strategic moves. But within 7 months, we actually doubled sales and moved from fifth place into first place. So we kind of crushed them, which was cool. And then whenever I went to the next company, about half the size sales team, again, and we're going to talk about some of the things that I incorporated there. Again, I made just a couple of strategic moves, and we tripled revenue in the first 4 months, right? Doubled it on the year. Just kind of have a knack for finding those little things. It's like, wow, this little lever here will actually make the biggest difference in the outcome.
Yeah, often it is the tiniest things in both selling and sales management that can make a huge difference if you can just figure them out. I know one of the things that is really tricky is hiring great salespeople. And I know you help companies with that. But you've had actually, I think, like 5 clients hire 2 salespeople when they actually only asked you for 1. What's the secret sauce to hiring great salespeople?
That's a great question. So, I use a particular brand of assessments. It's the one that I've been using for the past 20 years as a management consultant. And it's very, very deep. It answers, how people behave, why they behave that way, and what they think about. I've been privileged to actually see more than 10,000 of those particular assessments. So I know them pretty well. we took that to a whole new level. Where we created from the deepest part of the assessment an algorithm, and I'll explain that later, that provides what we call DNA. And I can very, very quickly tell you, who the top contenders are, right? And who you ought to stay the heck away from.
Sure.
The big thing for me, I want to answer 3 questions. Can they do the job, right? Just because, somebody has a black book, a network or whatever, or they've been in XYZ space, doesn't necessarily mean they can do the job. The second question is, well, how well are they going to do it, right? Because that's the difference between an A player and a B player. I don't know what do you want your team to be comprised of, right? But then the third question is, are they going to stay? Because if you get an A player, but they aren't going to stay, well, you got a problem, right? So that's kind of the secret sauce.
Yeah, but if an A player doesn't stay, that's typically a culture problem, right? I mean, why would an A player leave a company if they were making money and happy?
Yeah,
yep. Yeah, gotcha. And what is that assessment tool that you use?
It's from Intermetrics. It's called Advanced Insights. It's actually a 3-part assessment, so 3 independent assessments. So it's not like all created from one person.
Very cool. And did I see, I'm not sure if I read this correctly, but when you help people hire candidates, you actually offer an extended guarantee on salespeople. Is that right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I think that whenever you do it right, you shouldn't have to worry about it. The funny thing is, and all the years that we've done this, I haven't had to replace anybody yet.
Wow.
I'm very, very thorough, whenever, and again, we'll get into some of this a little bit later, but very thorough in terms of my qualification of that individual, right? you know, and, you know, I actually start out the same assessment. I actually use it with the client, right? So the boss, because most people leave bosses, not jobs, right? So that's a part of establishing that cultural fit as well.
Mm. And you mentioned sales DNA a couple of times. What is sales DNA?
So from the deepest part of our assessment, it's actually an algorithm that we created, oh my goodness, probably 7 years ago, something like that. And so the curious thing is that, you know, even with me seeing 10,000 assessments and knowing a thing or three about it, this thing sees deeper than what I can. I've had instances where, you know, I went back through, you know, somebody, I had a client who said, well, you know, I'm getting ready to terminate this particular individual. I'm like, why? You know, we assessed them on the way in. I don't understand. And so he told me what the situation was behind it. It was actually a work ethic issue. And so I went back. I'm combing through the assessment. I'm going, doggone, I can't find anything in here that says, you know, this person's going to be like that. So then we matched it through the DNA. And daggone, if he didn't come out, you know, below average in his work ethic. And I was like, if I'd only had this whenever we hired him, we wouldn't have hired him.
Hmm. So you might have had the skills, but not the work ethic to get the job done.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, got it. And what are some of the characteristics that separate an average salesperson, which I consider most salespeople are average. I call them plotters. They kind of plot along and, you know, quote is way off in the distance most of the time. But what separates that type of a salesperson from a true top performer?
Sure. So, and to your point, you know, I think I would say that and I've seen studies on this, actually a lot of people are in the wrong type of sales role. You know, they might be okay in sales, but they're not necessarily in the right role for them, right? But what I find, and I'm talking about hunters more than anything else, is resilience and competitiveness, right? If they're not resilient, they're not going to be in sales for very long. You know that, right? And I'll tell you how I used to do it before that we created the DNA. And competitiveness, because if they're not competitive, they're not going to be in your top tier of your sales team, right? I don't want somebody who's hanging in the middle or you know, way at the back. You know, if I'm hiring somebody, I want them to raise the bar for everybody else, you know? So back before I you know, found out how to create resiliency through the DNA, one of the things that I used to do, Jeff, is the first 30 seconds of an interview, phone interview. So Jeff, thanks for showing up. Really appreciate your time. Man, as I was preparing for this interview, I started looking at a couple of things through your history. I just don't think this is going to be a fit. I'm going to punch you in the nose and knock you on your butt in the first 30 seconds. Guess what? The guy who gets back in my face is resilient. Right? Because you can't ask the question. I mean, it's one of those unanswerable, at least not with truth, questions. Hey, Jeff, you resilient? What are you going to tell me? Well, of course I am. You know, tell me about a time whenever you showed resilience, you know, and I'll get an interesting story, right? But the demonstration, you know, is actually the proof in the pudding.
it's very funny. I ask the same exact question, but I ask that at the end of the interview, after I've done everything else. It's like, you know what? I like you, but I just don't feel this is going to work out, you know, you know, you want to change my mind. And, you know, the person goes, well, thank you very much for your time anyways. Yeah, that's not a salesperson, because we do face massive rejection on a daily basis. And if you can't engage in a conversation with somebody, at least to try to help them come to the right conclusion, to turn themselves around, because I don't believe salespeople can convince anybody of anything, that we have to help them do it for themselves. But if they're not going to try to do that on a job interview to get the job, they're probably not going to do it with my clients and prospects. So it is a waste of time. Maybe I need to switch that up to the front of my interviewing so that I don't waste any time. Do you have situations where you'll ask that question up front and they fail and you just terminate the interview immediately, or do you still go through?
Yep. Well, I don't have to ask the question anymore because it shows up in the DNA.
Gotcha. So what do people get wrong when they're hiring salespeople?
You know, that's a great question. I was thinking about that. And I'll tell you what I think it is that they kind of march through a laundry list of questions and just accept the first answer, right? As opposed to drilling down. Tell me more about that. You know, let's go into some detail. Why did you make this decision to turn this way versus that way? You know, what kind of challenges did you face? Things like that. The first response is generally, to me, not the most truthful response necessarily, because they're salespeople, right? Not calling all salespeople liars, but, you know, by the same token, you know, if you don't understand how they think about things and how they really respond in certain situations, you're not really learning anything about your salesperson. You know, you're going to get a surprise, you know, within the first 90 days, right?
Yeah, 100%. That's why one of the questions I always ask is, let's say we agree that we're going to work together and, you know, today's your first day. And I say, here's a phone, go get them. What are you going to do? How are you going to go find prospects? Tell me what your process is going to be. And All I'm looking for personally, and please tell me if you do something similar, is can you think on your feet? Because if somebody says, gee, I don't know, I thought you were going to guide me. Well, that's not my salesperson. But they say, well, you know, I'd like to know, you know, I'd like to speak to some of our current clients to see what characteristics they have and maybe possibly get some referrals. And then I'll go on LinkedIn and do some searches based on our ideal client profile. Anything like that to show me that you can think. Now I'm at least willing to talk to you. But if it's like, gee, I don't know, because sales is a game of thinking on your feet, which is also why I like to ask what I call situational questions. Tell me about a time you had this happen and what happened, because these stock, you know, personally, you know, tell me about your resume. I've got it in front of me. I don't need you to go through it bit by bit. In fact, I actually tell people, I don't need you to go through every job. Just give me an overall view of who you are and what your strengths are and what you're looking for in your next opportunity. And by the way, I have to say, I completely agree about the competitiveness. It's why I love hiring ex-athletes. They may not always be the sharpest knife in the drawer, but boy, they hate losing and they love to win. And they're often really good team players.
Yep. And that first part, I think, is the most important, hate losing. Everybody loves to win, but man, the top tier, they hate losing.
Absolutely. So what kind of questions do you ask sales? But what other kinds of questions before you'll actually present them to a company? I know you're doing the assessment with them, but are there any other particular questions that you're asking?
Right. So yeah, most of the questions are actually just to confirm the results from the assessment. You know, I'm generally pretty confident with that. You know, I know the reliability of it. So I don't have an issue with it, but you know, I just do a few to actually just confirm. But the next part is ask them to walk me through one of their biggest wins. Right now, you and I being sales guys and sales management guys, we understand whenever something isn't making sense. You know, I'm going to ask those clarifying or necessarily qualifying questions to find out, okay, so you're telling me that, you know, you did this and this is what happened with the client, and find that a little bit difficult to wrap my head around. Why don't you help me with that? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I actually ask a similar question, but the opposite way. I like to ask, you know, tell me about a time you were working on a big deal and it seemed like you were going to close that every second of the way. And at the end, something happened. It fell apart. Tell me what happened and what would you do differently? Because again, I want people to think on their feet, and anybody, excuse me, anybody who's been in sales for more than 10 minutes has lost a deal. And if they go, gee, I never lost one, well, you're definitely not in sales, because we all lose them. But I want to see how they think on their feet, because sales is a game of thinking on their feet. The other thing, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, is my advice to my clients in my role is, if somebody does not ask me for the job, or at least ask me at the end of the interview, what's our next step to try to move it forward? They're not a salesperson. If you're not going to try to close me on the job, you're probably not going to ask people for their money when you're out there in the field. Do you do something similar?
Yeah, that's funny. I actually do a variation of that. Whenever I was running my last inside sales team, I anticipate they're going to ask me for the job, right? So I would have my assistant come in, right, about 5 minutes before we were supposed to wrap up, and say, Joseph, you're needed out here. We've got a customer, they're irate or whatever, right? And I'd be like, hey, listen, let's talk again. Love the interview. Just give me a call. Right. And the reason I did that is because, especially in inside sales, you're subject to the person on the other end of the line picking up the phone. Right. So, and chances are you're going to have to leave voicemails, multiple voicemails. Right. If you're not cool with that, you shouldn't be in inside sales. You know what I mean? Sometimes I think that people formalize the interview process so much that they forget, no, this is all, it's still the sales game, right? So typically what I would do is, you know, I'd say, listen, just give me a call. Sorry, I got to run. And so then they would, you know, if they were decent enough, they would call. And the first time, guaranteed, they would get my voicemail. And the second time, they would get my voicemail. The third time, and by the way, I'm looking for a different voicemail from 1 to 2. You know, capture my attention, please.
Right. Not just, hey, Joseph, I'm just following up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Stop that. and, you know, sometimes I would actually make them go through a third one. Just, you know, kind of depends on what the candidate looked like. I had an interesting one. In that particular sales team, the way that sales worked, which is probably why I don't have an heir, is that every month my boss would have some kind of a special deal. It's a 2-for-1 offer or whatever, which meant that the only pitch really or close, you know, that my folks knew was hurry up and get this deal. It's ending at, you know, tomorrow, whatever, right? So almost 50% of the revenue would come in the last 2 business days of the month, right? If that can't give you an ulcer, man. I had actually told this one candidate that. Then he called the second to last day of the month and acts like an irate customer, right? And somebody says, Joseph, this guy, he is flipping out. He wants to talk to you right now. Okay. And I pick up the phone and I can't remember. Oh, Greg. And he says, hey, Joseph, it's Greg. I said, Greg, come in Monday. I hired him, right? He was one of my top guys. I liked the approach. It was creative.
Yeah. It's amazing how many salespeople won't follow up, won't make the calls. If you're not going to be persistent in the interview process, then you're not going to be persistent. You know, you called it resiliency before, and it's lacking in so many salespeople. And I love that you're testing them in the interview process, because if they can't make it, they should be good at interviewing because they're selling their favorite product. And if right. they can't sell themselves and they can't show us what the process is going to be like, then, they're wasting my time. One of our listeners, John Hill, says he interviews salespeople at 5 a.m. in the diner. If they complained Ooh. About getting up to attend the meeting, they were not the type of salesperson I wanted. I got to tell you, I'm not sure I would have gotten that job. Because to be at a diner at 5 a.m., that means I probably got to wake up at 3:30 or 4. That would have to be some opportunity for me to get me there that early. But I love that John was testing people.
Yeah,
besides the interviewing, the assessment that you do and the questions that you ask, obviously, when you send a candidate to a company, the company has to do an interview also. And my experience is most companies are horrendous. Most people are, even, you know, highly experienced VPs of sales, they just are not asking the right questions, because in my opinion, you don't ask a salesperson the same questions you would ask almost anybody else. Like sure. me personally, I don't care where you see yourself in 5 years. I don't care what your spirit animal is. What I care is how are you going to do the job? So what are some of the questions that that you think a company that you're sending a candidate to, what should they be asking the candidate on the interview?
You know, first of all, my assessment actually uncovers it, but I would like them to find out for themselves. And the first thing that I would encourage them to find out, especially if they don't use my assessment, is about personal accountability, right? I don't want a salesperson who is going to play the blame game. Well, the dog ate my homework. I don't care. What's on the scoreboard, right? So how I would go about doing that, and actually how I've guided my clients to that, you know, tell me about a time when you made a mistake. You know, how long did it take you to realize that and communicate it to you know, the necessary people within your organization, right? First of all, the acknowledgement of the mistake, because anybody who says, hey, I didn't make any mistakes, right, get out of here. but, you know, second, the acknowledgement, and then because it's another thing also, if they just make the mistake, acknowledge it, but then don't tell anybody, right, that could be problematic in the wrong circumstance, right? Sometimes I'll actually take that to the next level and ask them, this is more of a character thing. I'll ask them about the biggest mistake that they've made in their life. Could be business, could be life, doesn't matter. And, you know, what did they learn from it, right? Part of the reason, and I'll tell you what I'm looking for there, is that they're self-reflective enough that they realize, that they're actually learning by principle as opposed to one-off lessons. What I learned, I was able to apply multiple times going forward to avoid that same mistake, right? That kind of thing. I would dig into that. The second level of question is around that resiliency, or we might even call it grit these days. So how have you dealt with a past failure, right? Both the emotional and, what did you do to actually, get yourself back on track, right? Because, somebody who doesn't know how to do that, you're going to be babysitting. I don't know. Is that something you want to do? I don't want to do that.
Not me. And I agree with you on the resiliency thing. I always want to know, how people deal with rejection, because, it's a major part of our job. I don't know about you, but I speak to people all the time who tell me, oh yeah, I close 100% or I close 90%. And my answer is always, really? Yeah. I should be taking your class, because I don't. I also love how every sales resume says, made President's Club every quarter of my entire career. I didn't. And I'm pretty damn good at sales.
Yeah, well, that's a low bar for President's Club in your company. the one final line of questioning that I would encourage folks to ask, I create this scenario. I call it the good boss, bad boss. Tell me about a boss that you've had in the past that was the best boss ever for you. First of all, what made them, such a good boss? Were they a mentor? Did they, did they take, into account the whole person as opposed to just, you at work or whatever? I'm gonna be catching some clues from that, but then I'll flip it. And you have to do the good boss first, because if you start with the bad boss, it kind of screws people up, right? To say, okay, so tell me about a boss that you just, it wasn't quite working, And the reason for that is because we want to avoid a similar mistake, If the boss they described just happens to be the boss that they're getting ready to report to, well, that's a problem. We can already tell you how long they're going to stay, right? So I would just find that out in advance.
Yeah, I'd also be listening for, are they bashing the boss and blaming them for everything?
True.
Well, my boss sucked and the lead sucked. And, you mentioned it a minute ago, I'm a big fan of no excuses, because my feeling is this. You can have the best excuses in the world. The lead sucked, the economy's down, whatever it is. But at the end of the month, if you didn't close enough business, the bank is going to come repossess your house and your car. They're going to take it away. I'm sorry, the economy was down. Citibank doesn't care. They're taking away they're foreclosing on the house and they're taking your car. So I understand that there are circumstances that can affect selling, but we got to close business no matter what the circumstances are.
That's right. That's right. Find a way through.
Over, under, around, or through. I think it was Michael Jordan who said that. Someone, you got to find a way over, under, around, or through. Of course, there are going to be obstacles. And you have a process, hire hard, manage easy. You've talked a little bit about hiring hard, but what is hire hard, manage easy? What does that mean?
So it's actually an offshoot of, and I'm sure you've probably heard this before, qualify hard, close easy. You ever heard that?
Qualified hard, close it. Sure.
Okay. So similar thing. It sounds like it's going to be rough on the candidate. It's actually not. It's more stringent on the company or the interviewer. In other words, they need to set a high standard and don't compromise. Right. I run into folks, not so often anymore. My clients know a little bit better than that. Instead of saying, well, they had this thing or they knew this person or whatever, and I'm still asking the questions. Can they do the job? How well are they going to do it? And are they going to stay?
Gotcha. If there was just one distinguishing factor that makes the biggest difference in what you do, what do you say that would be?
I've heard this before from my clients, and we treat their business like it's our business, right? So in other words, I'm not going to put anybody forward that I wouldn't personally hire. And I think that in that, trust is established and everything else, but Man, I mean, it just makes such a profound statement to them. They've not heard that before, necessarily.
Yeah, I do the same thing. In fact, I actually tell people, you know, as your fractional, excuse me, or outsourced sales manager, I'm going to treat your money as if it was my own. I'm going to treat your sales team as if it was my own. I understand I'm part-time, but I'm going to act as if this was my company. And I agree with you. I think people like that. John wants to know, does the DNA take into consideration the support that they would need from a wife, girlfriend, husband, boyfriend? I know that John feels that sales is not a 9-to-5, it's 24 hours a day, and that if you don't have the support of the person at home, they'll likely fail. Does the assessment take that into account, or do you ask questions about that?
The DNA does not take that into account, but I would be asking questions about it.
I know that some managers will actually want to meet with a spouse, a boyfriend, significant other. I know that I had a partner at one time, and when we were hiring, we're taking them out to dinner, and I want the wife or the husband, or I want the other person there to get a feel for them, because I think we can agree that, you know, if you've got an unsupportive spouse, you're going to have a very difficult time in sales, because you need to know that somebody's in your corner when things aren't going well. Yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm a big fan of actually going out to dinner with folks, you know, to see how they treat the wait staff, right? Because some people are just, after I observe, you know, one interaction with the wait staff, you know, that's just uncalled for, yeah, that interview's over.
I could not agree more, and I use the same thing on dates. You know, somebody who's nasty to the wait staff, that's not the person I want to be with, whether it's as an employee or a partner. I'm with you. Now, we're talking a little bit about fractional sales management. You're offering that now. Could you please explain for people who don't know what fractional or outsourced sales management is? What is it, and why are you offering that now?
Sure. So I'll explain what it is first. Instead of necessarily hiring, you know, having to hire somebody who's at, you know, $250,000 to $500,000, you know, VP sales, you know, you can get somebody for, you know, an eighth of that time, sometimes even less, and you know, just a fraction of the price. But the horsepower that guys like you and I bring to the table is you know, really unique. I don't need to spend all day every day there. If I did, I'd probably blow out some of the sales reps, because you know, we're just going to be too intense. But you know, and you know, kind of costly to the client. But you know, I think that actually going in and making some very critical moves, setting up some established or establishing some procedures, some processes, because you know, most small businesses, and I'm talking about, you know, 10 or less sales reps, they just don't have the necessary you know, sales process in place, pipeline management system, things like that. So why now? First of all, I think that there are a lot of companies that are just really popping, and they've got you know, tremendous potential. The problem is, the founder is still kind of stuck in that mode of how they started the company, which means the chances are that they're still carrying a bag themselves. They think that it's their obligation, you know, to turn around and manage the sales team, right? But I mean, if you're really going to make the biggest dent in the market, you've got to graduate. You've got to become your new highest and best use self, where, you know, that founder is now the visionary, and they're taking care of things, you know, that are you know, miles down the road, and turn it over to somebody who's competent to lead the sales team. Because I mean, well, hey, you and I both know, sometimes managing that sales team, well, some of the terms that come to mind: chaos, drama, right? Things like that. And we have to deal with that every day. We've got to problem solve that on the fly. And you know, we can't be thinking about that and, hey, who are my future suppliers? What does my supply chain look like? You know, those are two separate hats, you know? And so I don't know how some founders can try to straddle that and still think that they're going to be effective.
Yeah, I find the exact same thing. In every instance where I'm brought in as the fractional sales leader, the salespeople were reporting directly to the owner of the company, who A, doesn't know how to manage salespeople. And there is both an art and a science to that. And it's not the same as selling, but they don't know how to manage salespeople. And they're wasting way too much of their time trying to do that instead of doing what you said, being the visionary and running their company, which is what they should be doing. And like you, for me, it's always 10 salespeople or less. Sometimes I'm working with a company that has no salespeople and wants to build a sales team. But to me, anything 10 or more, they really need a full-time sales leader. And what I usually do in my engagements, whether it's, you know, 6 months in or 5 years in, and I've done both, it's like I'll come to them and say, look, this is terrific. I've done everything I can possibly do for you. Let me help you bring on a full-time sales leader that's going to do the job for you and take your team to the next level.
Yep, when the time is right. You know, that's and the second, and I think it might could actually be worse, Jeff. You tell me. If the founder isn't managing the sales team, what they'll do is they'll promote the top sales rep to sales manager, right? There's two problems with that. You know what they are, right? First of all, you just lost your top sales rep, right? Second of all, you probably got a crappy sales manager.
Right, because most of them don't get trained. It's like we say, hey, Joseph, you're our top salesperson. We've done it. We've paid you everything we can pay you. You've won every prize. You're at President's Club every year. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a promotion, make you the sales manager. And to the Joseph in that example, it sounds terrific because you think, mistakenly, you think you're going to work less hard and make more money. Ha, ha, ha. You're going to work harder than your sales reps, and you're going to make less money than at least your top reps. And you said it before, the challenge really is they never train them to do the job. And I was very fortunate in my career that I worked for a company that first trained me how to sell and then saw something in me that I didn't see and put me through management training, because the two are very, very different. I would say, and I'd love to have your opinion on this, that if you have not sold successfully, you're going to have a very tough time leading a team of salespeople because you don't have credibility. But just because you've sold successfully does not mean you can also manage successfully. What are your feelings on that?
Agreed. So interestingly enough, I wasn't, whenever I took over the first sales team as director, I had prior to that actually been an account manager. It was a usage model. It was business intelligence, right? So my clients were the top tier consulting firms, EY, PricewaterhouseCoopers. I did pretty good job there. But you know what, man, I was just consulting. You know what I mean? It's like, was I selling? I was consulting with them and they liked that. They dug it, right? I think that it's actually, I think a part of what helped me be so successful was actually the analytical side of me, that thing of understanding, you know, which button to mash in order to get the biggest result, right? With that particular crew, I mean, we did two things. We separated hunters and farmers. We had one hunter, two farmers, because the guys who could sell really, really well couldn't keep their clients happy for anything, right? The folks who could keep their clients happy couldn't sell. Right. Okay. Well, let's just put them together. And hey, man, we created a magical team. But then the second thing was that we had a rapid exchange of information. We had that advantage being the inside sales team, right? Because you've got all these outside regions. Remember, I said that we're in fifth place out of six. They were all geographic regions. And so whenever things would be coming down, they wouldn't necessarily be talking to each other. We're talking to each other every day. We're seeing what's happening and we're making adjustments on the fly.
Mm. Right. Love that. We're a little more than halfway through an interview with Joseph Skirsky of Market Leader Solutions. We'll be back in 60 seconds after a word from our sponsor, me.
Hi, I'm Jeff Goldberg, the founder of the Sales Pro Network. For nearly 5 decades, I've been selling, managing, coaching, and training salespeople internationally. And I'm often asked for one-on-one or private coaching, but it does involve a substantial investment. For that reason, I've recently developed the Sales Pro Insider Network community. It works like this. We get together twice a month on Tuesday nights from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern. At the first session of the month, it's you and me, with me taking your questions and giving you the advice and help you need to both prospect and sell more effectively. At the second session of the month, we'll have a guest coach speaking on a fascinating topic that helps sellers like you and me. And of course, we'll do group coaching then too. The best part is the investment is just $27 for the first month, and there's no long-term contract at all. In fact, you can cancel at any time. Go to crushsalesgoals.com. That's crushsalesgoals.com. I hope to see you there.
We're back with Joseph Skirsky, of Market Leader Solutions. He helps companies increase their sales by both helping them hire the right people and through fractional sales management. Joseph, when you're the fractional sales manager, what do you find to be the most challenging thing about managing salespeople, especially on a fractional basis?
Sure. I think that we'd agree that most salespeople are very headstrong. Do you agree?
Yeah, good salespeople are, sure.
So, back whenever I was in my younger years, right, late 20s, early 30s, I didn't have any problems. I was a little too forceful. I wasn't a good leader, frankly. I mean, despite the results, I don't consider myself to have been a good leader then. What I do now is actually more of, I don't know if you've ever heard this, that people don't argue with their own data. You ever heard that?
People don't argue with their own data? No, yeah. But it makes sense. Why would I argue with my own data? It's my data.
Exactly. So how do I get you to discover something so that you wrap your arms around it and say, that's mine, right? This is a little bit of a crude story, but bear with me. I grew up on a farm, right? We had all kinds of things. We had horses, sheep, pigs. Had a couple of pigs that it was time for them to go. They were being sold. And I think I was 15 at the time. I'm sitting up in the hay mow. I'm watching my dad and a couple of his big brute buddies try to load these pigs into the crate, right? And they would get behind them and they would try to push me. I mean, they were getting their shoulder into it and everything, trying to get them into the crate. And I don't know if you've ever seen something like that, but the pigs, they would dig in their hooves, right? You ain't moving them, right? I watched this for like 45 minutes, right? And finally I said, hey dad, everything that you try to do, that pig says, no, I'm not going the way you want me to go. I'm going my way. Why don't you grab that 5-gallon bucket, stick it over their head and back them into the crate. 5 minutes, both pigs loaded.
Wow.
Right? I'm not calling salespeople pigs, but what I'm saying is that not by any stretch, but what I am saying is that, whenever people realize, hey, this is my idea now, they'll run with it quickly, right? And for the most part, effortlessly on your part. What it comes down to for guys like you and me, Jeff, is asking the right questions so that that person has their own little aha moment. And then it's not a fight. It's not a struggle anymore.
Right. 100%. Because most of the best salespeople are independent and they want to believe that they are the master of their own destiny. So I call it empowerment. How do we lead them to make the right decision for them, which is really the same way I sell? How do I lead somebody to make the right decision for them, which is hopefully to do business with me? It's certainly not about, at least in sales, it's not about convincing or persuading or talking people into things. Well, sales management can be that, but you're going to get, it's the old, you get more with honey than with, you get more flies with honey than, I forget what the rest of it is, but
right, the thing.
Yeah. So, how do we lead the salesperson and go, oh yeah, this is what I should be doing. I'm with you. And Chris Williamson, not only an excellent salesperson, but a very funny stand-up comedian, says, I've met some companies that promoted their top sales rep to manager, and it was a disaster. Managing is a different skill. Joseph, you use something called ESS. What's ESS?
That's an effective selling system. And I'm actually kind of correlating that to, are you familiar with the EOS?
Sure.
The Entrepreneur Operating System?
I am.
So I'm actually kind of building that out to go hand in glove with that.
Oh, got it. Yeah. I'm a fan of EOS. I know several implementers that are really good at their jobs. Also help companies map their sales process to their customers' buying process, which makes perfect sense. I guess one question is, in your opinion, do all buyers use the same buying process? And if not, how do you actually help your clients discover what their client's buying process is?
Sure. So first of all, I don't think that everybody uses the same buying process. There are some similarities, some overlaps, so we can make some broad generalizations. But, I also want to know at an individual level, what makes this customer tick? I'm going to find out actually from, you know, talking with the sales reps, you know, why is this happening? Why is it happening at this time? That kind of thing. If I have to, I'm going to interview the clients, mm-hmm. right? Just to find out, you know, why do you do it like this? I'm sure there's a good reason, and that's cool. I just need to understand it.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've told clients and prospects, you know, your customers are your best source of intelligence. That if you want to know what they're thinking, go ask them.
Yep.
If you want to know why they do business with you, go ask them. In fact, I actually paid somebody fairly early on in my company's existence, about a year after I had started. He went around to my customers without me with a video camera, just videoed them saying, why do you do business with Jeff? What do you like about working with Jeff? And those videos are on my website because, first of all, I think video sells. It really, you know, video tells a great story. And, you know, if you go to my website and you see the video of me, and there is one there saying why I'm the greatest in the world, and why you should use me, you're going to go, yeah, but it's him saying that. He wants my money. But when your customers are telling you, they have no vested interest in telling a lie or exaggerating. And I think companies are crazy to not ask. And by the way, I'm often surprised by the answers I get. You know, what I think, the reason I think they're doing business with me is often not. And when you really know why people choose to do business with you, that's something you can use to sell to other people.
That's right.
So you talked about ESS. You also use EBM. I'm not familiar with that one either. What's EBM?
Education-based marketing, right? That's actually using some of those videos like you were talking about, those testimonials. Funny thing, I've got a very, very close colleague who said, way back, I had on my LinkedIn profile about being a trusted advisor. He said, you know, you really can't say that yourself. If you have a client say, Joseph is a trusted advisor, that carries weight, but you can't say it, right? Anyway, so what I find is that education-based marketing actually collapses that trust cycle. So it takes, I mean, we all do business with people that we know, like, and trust. Well, trust is actually a pretty doggone important thing, you know, and not easily won. So, you know, to be able to educate people, have them, you know, relate to other clients of yours or colleagues or whoever, you know, is going to say, you know what, I have some good reason actually to trust this person.
Mm. I love what you said about calling yourself a trusted advisor. I do think that's the highest level that a salesperson should aspire to get to. You know, when you're a salesperson, that means you're somebody who'll come in and try to sell me something. But when you're a trusted advisor, you're the person I call, even if it's not for what you offer. Hey, Joseph, do you know anybody? I need an accountant for one of my clients. That's a trusted advisor. You have a seat at the table. And by calling yourself that, it's not the same as really being that. It's like there's a commercial. I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but he starts out with, I'm blah, 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 the world's greatest sales trainer. Really? Every time I hear it, it makes me cringe because I'm like, I may not be the world's greatest sales trainer, but I'm damn good. And I've never heard of you. So
yeah.
What makes you the world's greatest sales trainer? Did you close the most business? I mean, where's the facts to back it up? That's an automatic turnoff for me because I'm automatically thinking, all right, if you're calling yourself that, you can't prove it. I'm the guy who's going to call you out on it every time. And we need, you said it, people do business with people they know, like, and trust. How are you going to trust me if I'm coming up with claims that I can't back up?
Yep.
And I am the type of, pardon my French, prick that will call you on it because I'm not just going to take your word for it. You're also very big on something that I'm very big on, and I'm not sure that everybody really understands what it is and the power of it. Talk to me a little bit about pipeline management and pipeline management systems. What is a pipeline management system? And by the way, I teach this at corporations, and I consider this to get the biggest return on investment. So what is pipeline management? What is a pipeline management system? What does a good one need, and what does it actually accomplish?
Sure. So let's talk about what it is, and actually its usefulness. You know, because especially whenever you're a small business, you need to be able to forecast, you know, what's coming down the line, because, I mean, there's all kinds of things. There's, you know, negotiations with banks or, you know, new suppliers or what have you. So you need that level of forecast. And, you know, I think that if anything, and you tell me if you agree, a lot of times salespeople can get happy years, right? And it takes somebody who's, well, okay. And I mean, I'll give them this. they're subjective to that particular deal. I'm objective to it. Who's going to see it more clearly?
The sales leader.
Right. So it's not their fault. I mean, it's just, you know, the facts.
It's the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. It's who we are. And I like what you called it, by the way, happy ears. You know, we salespeople, and I'm not saying them, you know, you and me included, we have to be optimistic that everything's going to work out, because typically we hear no more often than we hear yes. And if we didn't believe everything was going to work out for in our favor, we couldn't do our jobs. We'd be beating our heads against the wall all day long. But the truth is, it doesn't always work out. And that optimism that we have blinds us to when people are saying no. And I think a good pipeline management system does exactly what you said. It takes away the subjective and makes it objective, so we can really know, is this a deal worth pursuing? Where am I talking about the same thing you are?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And as a result, I mean, my pipeline forecast, you know, according to our sales cycle, we had a short sales cycle, 6 weeks. You know, I was always plus or minus 5%, you know, that far out, you know, which is, you know, pretty good whenever you can say, hey, you know what, here's what I'm projecting. And oh, look at that. We hit it or exceeded it. Typically exceeded. But what does it accomplish? So first of all, I'm looking to make sure that they're identifying who the influencers are and who the actual decision makers are, right? So included in that, you know, they're going to need to cover pain, budget, and decision, right? Those are Sandler principles, but still, they're very important, right? But the other thing, and this one, I don't know about you, but I had to include this in a pipeline because that company where I told you where we tripled revenue in the first 4 months, they acted more like a boiler room operation when I got there. And so, you know, I had to, and I would have conversations and say, cool, hey, when are you talking to this person again? We're supposed to talk next Tuesday. When? Well, he said he'd call Tuesday. Okay. So I had that conversation one morning in the huddle that, you know, fellas, you're getting a promotion today. You're no longer telemarketers. You're inside sales professionals. Here's what an inside sales professional does. They schedule their next call. And it's not just in your calendar. It's in theirs, right? If it's not in theirs, it doesn't count, right? And I'm going to cause you to fall back. You might think that you're at 50%, but if you miss something like that, I'm going to bring you back to 1%, right? I mean, that's a hard slap to a salesperson, you know that.
I say that's 0%. If you don't have a best next action step, if it's not on their calendar and yours, you can't forecast on it, period. You can bring it back very quickly, but at that point, it's zero.
Yeah, you can. Zero is actually for dead deals, but you know the 1% is more like, you know, leaving a one penny tip for somebody. So,
yeah.
But yeah, those are the key components. You know, I've got you know, multiple steps through the process. How does yours look?
To me, there are a few things. I agree with you. The one of the important things that a pipeline management system has to do is give you an effective forecast. And you know, you with 95%. I mean, anything in that 90%+, that's better than almost every company gets, anyways. Most companies have a horrible forecast. It also should allow a salesperson to manage their time more effectively, because it helps them to focus on the deals that are more likely to close as opposed to the ones that are pie in the sky. Yep. And to me, the most important thing is that a well-run pipeline management system includes a regular pipeline review with your manager. And I love pipeline reviews for one simple reason. If you're my manager and I'm a salesperson, you're going to ask me questions about every deal that I'm working on. And I'm assuming that, like me, you would be also asking me the most important question out of the many questions I'd be asking, but the most important, which is, what is your next step? What are you going to do? And let's assume they have an appointment on the calendar and it's on the prospect's calendar. I want to know what your plan is. Now, as my manager, hopefully you'll either go, Jeff, that's exactly what I would do. Yes, go. That's exactly what you should do. Or you're going to give me some advice that I couldn't think of, because it may not necessarily be that you're smarter or more experienced or any of those things, but you have a different point of view. I've said this many times, and I apologize to the people who've listened to this podcast before, because I am a broken record with it. But there's a phrase that I like the sound of. I just don't believe it's true for most people. And that phrase is, think outside the box. I love the idea of it. I just don't think most people can do it. But you, as my manager, can think outside my box because you have a different set of skills and experience and training. So you, when I say, I'm going to take them out to lunch, you go, great, take them out to lunch. And why don't you invite a happy customer out to lunch with the prospect so they can say nice things? And I go, well, that's a great idea. I didn't think of that. So the most, to me, the, I mean, I love all things about pipeline management, but for me, the salesperson or you, the manager, to be able to give me advice to help me move a deal forward or possibly close it more quickly, that's the most important thing about pipeline management. And mm-hmm. and giving you a real, not subjective view of, does this deal have a 25% chance of closing, a 55%, whatever the percentage is, so that I know where I should invest my time. I'm not investing as much time in a 25% deal for $200 as I am in a 75% deal for $20,000. Right. And unfortunately, salespeople do make that mistake constantly. They consider all deals equal. They're not. They're just right. not. And yeah. I need to be, as a manager or as a salesperson, I need to be focused on the deals most likely to close with the most profit. And as a manager, we need to make sure that that's what they're doing, because salespeople will waste their time. Not that they're bad people. It's that they have what happy ears. I love what you called it.
Well, you know, the other thing is, Jeff, at a certain point, I don't know about you, but my folks were making more money than they had ever made in their careers.
Right? Sure.
And if they knew that that was actually my intention, it's not just a, you know, win for Joseph, right? I want to help you win. I want to help you be the best version of you, you know?
Isn't that the job of a sales manager? You know, yeah. How do I help you be the best version of yourself? You know, serve the most clients, help yourself, your family, and your company at the same time. Absolutely. What is the kingdom factor? I saw that on some of your LinkedIn posts. What's the kingdom factor?
Yeah, so that's actually, it's a faith-based coaching program. It's designed to help business leaders, you know, be the best version of themselves. And in the process, actually creating a marketplace ministry. I think that there are a lot of frustrated business leaders. They have that faith-based component inside of them, but they don't know what to do with it. You know, and so as a cohort leader, I'm helping them figure out what to do with it.
And how does that what does that have to do with selling? How does that affect selling?
How does it affect selling? That's a good question. I haven't thought about the answer to that. I'll say this, we're all in sales every day, right? At some level we are. I mean, sales is about influence, right? Sales leadership. So, you know, if I'm helping them, become a better leader, they're going to be able to bring their team, not just their existing employees, but their supply chain, their customers, their community, and create a positive difference there.
Yep. I've met people who are incredibly faith-based, who are highly successful in sales. And I've also met godless heathens who are also very successful. It's for me, it's whatever's working for you is okay by me. Before we go, tell us a little bit about your book. I believe it wasn't just you. You contributed to the book with a bunch of other people. It's called Winner's Mindset, Peak Performance Strategies for Success. I love the idea of that. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and what your ideas are regarding peak performance strategies?
Yeah. You know, I think there were 32 or 33 other authors, something like that. And it was real interesting to see some of the different perspectives, how they would approach things. You know, I came across from the standpoint of our assessments, for one thing, and I told a couple of stories about it in there too. But I think that the number one thing is self-awareness. You have to know in yourself your own strengths and your own weaknesses, right? If you don't, I mean, you know, it's kind of like Sun Tzu said, you know, that you're going to succumb in every battle if you don't know that stuff, right? And you know, in that, knowing the strengths and weaknesses to be true to yourself. In other words, where you have strength, you step into every opportunity. Where you have weakness, you know, you figure out a way to you know, supplement. Or, you know, I have a glaring weakness, right? I probably should have told you this up front. Typically I've got, two faces. There's just a blank face, right? And there's a mean face. And whenever I'm meeting somebody for the first time, and you know, especially in a sales call, it really used to screw them up because they couldn't get a good read on me, right? And because they couldn't get a good read, they couldn't trust me, right? So, you know, I would have to actually come out of the gate, you know, in the first 5 minutes and say, listen, Jeff, thanks for inviting me in. You know, how long do we have, that kind of thing. Before we go any further, here's my greatest fear. You know, I've been told that I've got an awkward behavioral style, right? And as a result, some people, because they can't read me, they think that I'm goofing on, and I'm not. And you know, as a, you know, they end up not being able to trust me. So listen, if you need me to smile, right, wave my hands all around while we're talking here, I'll do it. It's not going to come across as authentic, but the worst part is, it's going to take away from my ability to solve your problems. What would you like me to do? Hmm. Never lost another sale because they couldn't read me.
Yeah, I love that. And I call that acknowledging the obvious. If there's something that's true, you might as well just bring it out. And that's right in line with my theory on handling objections. Handling objections after you've asked people for their business, that's the wrong time to do it. You should be uncovering those way early in the sales process so that you can figure out, should I be investing any more time? Because if you've got somebody very early in the process, you realize, I don't know how I'm going to get past this objection, your best bet is don't bother. I mean, if you can, great. But if you can't, let's cut it short. Why do I want to meet with somebody 3, 4, 5 times over a period of weeks or months or even years in some sales, only to find out I didn't have a chance from the start? Cut it short, because one of the things I believe, and as a manager, I'm very big on this, and for myself, we only have so many hours each week and each day and each month that we can do what we do, sell. And I believe that you have to, as a salesperson, protect your time like a mother lion protects her cubs, because time's the one thing you can't get back. And so many salespeople, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, I find that they have kind of a lackadaisical attitude. And that's not the winner's mindset for sure, but it's like, it's so often I see people acting as if, there's always tomorrow. You know, I'll get to that tomorrow. Great. And for most of us, there is tomorrow. But for me personally, as a solopreneur, I know the more I can accomplish today, the more I can get done tomorrow, and the more time I have to do all the things I need to do. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I agree with that. Can I go back just a little bit? You were talking about, you know, wasting time and actually dealing with objections after you've asked for the business. It goes back to what we talked about a little bit ago with qualify hard, close easy, right? If you're qualifying hard, you're actually are answering those objections way, way early in the process, right?
Yep.
But back to your point, I agree. You got to make the most of the time. There needs to be an urgency, I think, with every salesperson. If there's not, if I got somebody who's just kind of sitting there going, yeah, whatever. Probably you shouldn't be on my team.
Yeah. And there's one more thing I want to mention before we go, because it came up this morning. I have a sales rep who I'm managing at a new client of mine. I've only been working with her a couple of weeks, and she's following up on deals that never closed from the previous sales rep. And I heard from her this morning. She goes, yeah, we lost this one because so-and-so never followed up. And it's like from 4 months ago. And I spoke to the guy today. He said, yeah, nobody ever called me again. And I just signed a contract with somebody else 2 days ago. You're shaking your head. I'm like, are you effing kidding me? Here's a deal we absolutely could have had, but nobody picked up the phone or sent an email and said, hey, are you ready to move forward? Or whatever words they wanted to use. Yeah. And you know, I believe like you do, the close should be easy. Qualify hard, and it should be the easiest. You're just asking somebody, you know, want to do business or not, in whatever words you're going to use. But I still do believe people need to be followed up with, and they need to be invited to buy, because, you know, brain science works that in that when people are making a buying decision, they think of the negative stuff. What if I make a bad decision? What if I make a mistake? And we need to help them by telling them a story about another client who was like them and they worked with us and lived happily ever after. But we still need to ask those words, whatever words we're going to use. Will you sign on the line that is dotted, from Glengarry Glen Ross? And unbelievably, well, not unbelievably, we're out of time again. Joseph, I'm going to share my screen in a moment. While I'm doing that, would you please tell people how they can reach you if they're interested in speaking with you or possibly using your services? And please remember that some people can see this live, but some people will be hearing you on a podcast.
Sure. Yeah. So, my email address is joseph at marketleadersolutions.com. Just mention something about this this broadcast, please. The other thing is my phone number, my direct phone number. Even though I live in Florida, it's a Pittsburgh number. It says 412-626-7442.
Okay, and obviously people can reach you on LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
Great. Joseph, thank you so much for your time today, for sharing your brilliance so generously. I truly appreciate it. And I'll end as I always do, my friends. Please remember that sales is a game of making things happen. Get out there and make sales happen. Have a great weekend, everybody. Have a great weekend, Joseph. Thanks again.
Cool. Thank you, Jeff.